Hey everybody, my name is Alec. This is Lunchbox Radio. Now I am all fucked up because I recorded something and released it while I was in Philadelphia, and then the time totally fucking changed also. So like I'm barely hanging on, gang. Like I barely know what fucking day it is. I do know the last episode was all about Dragon Ball Z, partially because I'd never talked about Dragon Ball Z, and partially in honor of the passing of Akira Toriyama, which is a really unfortunate way to end up talking about one of the biggest properties in anime, maybe the biggest property in anime, period. But definitely go listen to my thoughts about Dragon Ball Z in the episode before this. I think you'll really enjoy it because it's a fun celebration of a person who recently passed, who has had a lot of effect on the thing I show up in your ear holes once a week to talk about. But on that note, let's jump right into what we're talking about this week. And that's a little show that's currently running. And I've been doing that a lot lately, now that I think about it. But a show that's currently running called The Tales of Wedding Rings.
Anime considered. Lunchbox Radio.
Now, before we get started talking about the show proper, I want to throw it over to my resident AI helper, to give us a quick plot summary of what's going on in this show. Because I think she'll probably do a much smoother job of it, although it's not complicated. And then after that, I will get into this thing. So, take it away.
I'll give it my best shot. Tales of Wedding Rings is a story about Satu, a high school boy who follows his childhood friend and love interest, Haim, to a fantasy world where he unexpectedly becomes her husband and the legendary hero known as the Ring King. This sets him on an adventure involving magic, multiple kingdoms, and a quest to collect powerful rings.
Thanks, Ai. That was much better than I probably would have condensed it down. But, so I find myself at a weird place here because I don't often talk about things that I don't find much value in. And I'm not going to say I was surprised by this because I really wasn't, but I guess what surprised me is how bottom of the barrel this thing feels. And I'm going to get fairly meta here for a second, just because I think it's important. I don't think you get the kind of brand deal, like, cavalcade that probably occurred to get this featured at Anime NYC the way it was last Anime NYC before they switched date, because I think it's happening in a more normal time of year now, because they're going to use the whole convention center, because they really kind of fucking need it. Last one was really packed. Not like against fire code so, but it was popping in there when I went. And also I had to buy 3 separate badges this year because by the time I got the fuck in, all the full weekend badges were sold out, which is insane. But in any case, I don't think you really get this kind of brand deal so much before the Sony era of Crunchyroll, because if you missed it, or you weren't there, or you weren't paying attention, Anime NYC's main stage featured live first episode screenings of several shows. One of them was Metallic Rouge, which I'm still working my way through. One of them was, I think, something Momochi House, the Momochi House one. And then one of them was this, Tales of Wedding Rings. And if I'm honest, Tales of Wedding Rings, like, stood out like a sore thumb in terms of just not even, like, the not even, like, the episodes, but the, like, the actual, like, Tales of Wedding Rings, the very specific, like, name, especially when you have Metallic Rouge, which is, like, which was the thing I actually showed up at the main stage to watch because it was the Bones thing, and I've always liked that studio and what they do when they kind of get on their shit, when they get on their weird quasi-robot and music shit. Usually stuff is at least interesting. Like Listeners is, it's not great, but it's not uninteresting. So I was there for Metallic Rouge. I'm still there for Metallic Rouge in many ways. I'll probably talk about it on this show. But, and, like, Demon Lord of Momochi House was like an anime amalgamation of, like, okay, we know what that is. But Tales of Wedding Rings just was, like, it was an odd, it felt odd in the lineup, even before you kind of knew what it was about. And then we got what it was about, or kind of got what it was about. And you've heard the synopsis I gave, but the reason why I'm talking about it on this show, and the reason why I felt the need to devote a whole show to it, is because it's got a unique blend of bad. It's just got a unique blend of bad, and I find it interesting. And if you know anything about me, you know that I have this weird thing in me, which isn't a lot of fans of anything, or definitely fans of anime, but it's in a lot of, like, fans of stuff, in that sometimes I just need to watch the worst thing I can find. Like, my soul makes me do it. The thing is noticeably bad. It's just like quivering trash. And I eat it up. Like, I'm like Sean Connery with the milkshakes in SNL. Like, I eat that shit up. And that's just in me. And I do so knowing it's trash. Just knowing it's trash. Sometimes that trash has some redeeming value. Like, say, Queensblade. Queensblade is a very interesting, weird pile of garbage that it exists because people like to see anime boobs, basically. But, like, sometimes it's this garbage? Shove your face in it, you fucking dumbass. And that's what this show is. And the reason, and, like, it makes me sad that it's garbage, actually. Because the premise and the idea are there. And so I want to talk a bit about that. The premise of this guy, of somebody becoming kind of like the universal link for all of the good parts of a fantasy world to fight the big bad evil, is not new. There's nothing really about this show that's new. But the idea that they do bring to bear, they just can't nail the execution ever. So perfect example is the Land of Fire, the cat girl princess. The cat girl princess. There's a whole cat girl nation. But the idea behind the cat girl nation is really cool. It's that it's not really a nation that stays in one place. It's this big collective of almost like circus tents. And they just are a giant roving fortress of fucking maniacal warrior cat people. And that sounds cool as shit. It sounds so awesome. But, like, they don't, A, they don't spend enough time there. B, they don't do a whole lot with it, I don't think. And C, like, once you're kind of dispensed with each area, they don't spend, like, they just kind of, like, leave the areas. And it falls short of itself constantly. And while it has pretty oddly good, it has some good ideas about character designs in some cases. So a perfect example is, like, you could have done a whole bunch of weird things with the two main characters, the princess of light, I forget her name, with Hime, her name is literally Hime, or the main character, and I don't remember his name, and I should tell you something that I don't care to, the long and short of it is that, like, they do an interesting thing with Hime in that the main character knows immediately that she's from another world because he sees her and her grandfather, who we'll fucking get to, just come out of a portal from another world, full on. And from there on, he's very aware that, like, oh, these people are from another world. They grow up together. What they do with Hime's character is they turn her essentially into a gal. They turn her into a Garu, like, schoolgirl. And they never deviate that from that, really. And that's at least an interesting idea of, like, it's like, this girl grew up here and, like, she was under the same... She may have been born in, like, a fantasy world where she is, like, the chosen princess. One of the five chosen princesses, you find out. But she is completely susceptible to, like, all the stuff that any girl would be. And she ends up, like, a fashionista Garu-style, like, design. Now, is it incredibly original? No. Is it a bit odd? Yes. The character designs in this all kind of feel like that. They feel like stuff you've seen before. Everything in this show feels like something you've seen before. It doesn't feel fully formed and new. And here's where I want to talk about the studio that actually did this, because I think I don't talk about, like, production stuff. I look it up oftentimes just because I want to know, but I don't talk about it because I think that's a thing that lots of anime fans care about, but I think it's a thing that doesn't super matter in terms of the end product. As long as the end product is good, and as long as the end product is good and no one was, like, overtly harmed in the making of it, like, it doesn't matter if Madhouse or A1 Pictures makes the second season of One Punch Man. What matters is Madhouse brought their A game and knocked it out of the park and showed up to do it, and something at A1 Pictures prevented them from doing that. And that ended with this, like, thing, because if you think about stuff that A1 Pictures has worked on, they've worked on some really beautiful things. Say what you will about the story structure behind Darling in the Franxx, that show looked great. If season 2 of One Punch Man looked as good as Darling in the Franxx looked, we would probably be having a very different conversation about that second season of One Punch Man. So my point is that any collection of artists can produce any level of animation given the right circumstances. And the reason why I want to talk about the production team, the production house behind this show, is because they did another show that is really arresting and has some similar problems, but it's, like, manages to get away from them in a really interesting way. And so the studio that did this is Staple Entertainment, and they were founded in February of 2020, which tells you some real things. But among what they've done is Vermilion Gold. And I was like, why does Staple Entertainment sound so familiar? And then when I had Fujoshi Sensei, my custom GPT research assistant, pull up a list of what they'd done before, I realized, like, oh, I talked about Vermilion Gold on this show. I like that show. That show is did something really interesting with its character. Were its character designs necessarily fantastic? No. Vermil as a character design is like this distillation of a, like, etchy MILF character. over-sexualized MILF character that, like, is the platonic ideal of that thing, of that, like, eldritch horror MILF. That makes any fucking sense. That's very well-known hentai / ecchi, but actually hentai comic about a kind of, like, evil Oni-chan sexy lady that is much of what Vermil's character is actually referencing. But the long short of it is, it's like, I like that show. That show was interesting. It had interesting things to say. It had an interesting thing to say about the kind of position that Vermil was in, and that she put people around her in by being that way. Which made me do a double take at them producing this thing. And the reason why I'm saying that is because it would be one thing if the plot was substandard, which it kind of is. It'd be one thing if the character archetypes were rote, but not so stuck in their stereotype that they became this kind of, like, once again, platonic ideal of it. Because you have, among the characters, you have the one true love character in Hime. You have this, like, shy, but, like, under the surface, very curious elf girl. You have the, like, sexy cat lady who's also tan. Who's also tanned. Because I'm only up to episode 9, because I'm not going to watch this. I'm not going to watch this subtitled, y'all. I'm not going to put that much brain power into it. You have this character who's kind of, like, she's really standoffish, but she still, like, participates. Like, she doesn't just completely be like, no, fuck you, which would be funnier. She's always in the picture, and just, like, the characters don't feel like they're committed to enough. The premise is a good idea. It's a good idea initially. It's a good premise for an ecchi storyline, but that can still have weight. And if you did it right, you could still make it feel like it was worthwhile. And the way I know that the studio should be able to do this is that's kind of what they did with Vermilion Gold. The concept behind Vermilion Gold is that, like, Vermil needs to basically, like, get to third base to, like, refill her mana. And the, like, controversy with that show is, like, the main character is a teenager, and she's, like, an adult woman. And there's a lot of wish fulfillment. There's a lot of, like, ecchi stuff that's happening there. But even with the, and I talked about this in the episode, you can go listen to it. Even with the addition of just the ending sequence, you get this understanding of, like, that character didn't necessarily choose to be the way she is. She's had to adapt to it through what seems like decades and maybe centuries of time of being this, like, eldritch thing that she wasn't always, but something led to her being that way. And in this show, at least at this point, it's not... And my gut feeling is that they're not spending enough. They almost immediately start dividing up the, like, attention paid to each quote-unquote princess or girl really quickly. And so what you get is you get the same problem you get in, like, a hilariously Love Hina situation, in that you have characters that you just don't care about. But the writing behind it isn't talented enough to give the main character, like, a real episode, at least from what I've seen, a real episode alone with each character quickly enough where they can, like, form a... where the viewer can form a fuller opinion of what the fuck is happening in the interior lives of these women. Because the thing that from the outside looking in, people don't get about these kinds of shows is the guy is kind of the least important part of it for anybody involved in watching it. The thing you're showing up for is the interior lives of all of the women that you see, that like latch on to him, for example. I'm going to use an example of a much better show than this, Monster Musume. Monster Musume is excellent, but it is also, by many people's estimation, kind of trashy. But the thing that makes it excellent is that it gets into, which all except for really one character, it very quickly gets into, like, the internal life of the different monster girls who show up for a character whose real name is given, like, maybe once. Except everybody just calls him Darling. To the point where they call him Darling-kun at some point. And so you have characters... You have scenarios in which they give him just enough personality to make him into, like, a shade of what a real person could be, but they give him just enough personality to play off of whoever the romantic, like, whose partner opposite him at the moment is, where it works. Where it, like, and I'm thinking specifically of Arachne, the big, sexy, dominatrix-looking spider lady. And in her... So, I'm just going to do a quick rundown of her, like, basic episodes. So spoiler alert for Monster Musume. Specifically Arachne's episode. I forget which number that is. But basically, she is doing a homestay with someone who is afraid of her. And who treats her like a monster. And there's lots of shades in the show about... already at this point, about, like, the monster girls essentially being disabled. And, like, that, and the show very much... The show and the manga very much code, like, this, like, whole program is, like... Essentially, Japan is getting an ADA, whether it likes it or not. And if you don't know what the ADA is, it's the Americans with Disability Act. That's the reason why whenever you go into a public building, you see a wheelchair ramp. That is the ADA. Full stop. If you're wondering why no one just doesn't obey that, it's because the ADA is designed to fucking annihilate you if you don't follow the rule. Like, the ADA functionally starts at one fee structure, and then eventually, if you do not comply, it seeks to unmake a company. Like, let's say... I'm doing this for a reason. Let's say... you go into... Starbucks. And Starbucks doesn't have wheelchair access. The ADA would fine Starbucks. Not until they met a certain point. but until Starbucks complied. And if Starbucks never complied, they would keep fining them. If they closed the store, they would probably keep fining Starbucks. Like, it doesn't matter. The ADA will get its due, or it will make you do what is right for disabled people around the world. It's incredible. I encourage you to go read the text of the ADA, of the Americans with Disability Act, and just see how hard it fucks people who try to not follow the letter of that law. It's incredible. But, so, in that, with that context, Arachne is essentially a disabled person. Like, she has different needs than a normal person. She can't, like, fit into a normal door. She can't, like, fit in a car. She's essentially a personal wheelchair, for all intents and purposes. And we already have, at that point, Meru, I believe, who is literally a mermaid they stick in a wheelchair. Like, when she's not in the water, she just has a wheelchair. It's awesome. But as a person who is disabled and like to see representations of disability anime, that show nails it every time. But when Darling-kun like encounters her, he sees her as a whole person. He even sees her as a whole person enough to be like, no, I think the eight legs are kind of fucking sexy and it rules. And that brief moment creates the, like, floor of the possibility of a relationship between those two characters, and also creates a framework to get inside, to, like, get closer to that, to Arachne as a character. They start to do it with these characters, but then they, like, stop. Or they don't give, at least so far, they don't really give the characters enough time with each other or with the main guy for you as a viewer to get enough of a picture of their interiority. They all seem like they're secondary to the main love interest. But the main love interest also isn't that interesting, and they... This is a real problem I have with romance stuff. And the reason why I kind of like, and why I think a lot of otaku kind of eventually burn out on most romance anime. And that's because the will they is excruciating. It's just excruciating. And like, the will they, won't they is like a normal thing. It's been around since the dawn of time. Hell, I already mentioned Love Hina. That's like the progenitor of will they, won't they nonsense. But as the two sides of the border of anime and hentai have gotten closer together, they necessarily can't meet because of broadcast standards, because of rating standards, because of indecency laws. And when they do, you get fucking interspecies reviewers just like, hey, we are the truth. And everybody loses their mind and somebody definitely gets fired from Funimation. But so I'm not saying it needs to be that. But if you go back to a show like His and Her Circumstances, His and Her Circumstances, Arima and Kirino canonically fuck. They just sleep together. And the show makes it really clear that when that happens and how that happens, and then they like move on. And that they let that evolve, that relationship. If you want this kind of dynamic to work, of like, you want this to be the real couple, and then you want these to be these, like, kind of marriage by obligation couples, then, like, you need to, at some point, the will they, won't they gets obnoxious. And when, like, you're on episode 9 and still the joke is, we're going to have sex and then we don't. It's not fun to watch. The first couple times is cute, but it's not cute after that. Like, when the will they, won't they loses to, like, unless you make the whole show into, like, this very specific thing, like, Kaguya-sama, the will they, won't they can't sustain, like, your belief in it can't, like, make it through that, if that makes any sense. And, how should I put this? The rest of the show isn't good enough to support that. And that's really what I want to spend the rest of the time kind of focusing on, is this show is wild, y'all. Like, the production of this show is fucking off the rails. It's been a long time since I've seen shit like this. Seriously. And I know that there's a whole batch of stuff every season that I probably avoid that probably fucking terrible. That's probably fucking CGI guts from name an adaptation of a part of Berserk. Where his fucking arm slides backwards and off screen. But this is the first thing I really noticed about the production slip-ups of this show. The people's skin tones fucking all over the place in this show. Sometimes people are white, sometimes people are tan, sometimes people are fucking pink. Sometimes it looks like you took a magnet to your TV, to your boob tube TV from the 90s, and everyone's pink now. Sometimes it looks like you're watching. Sometimes people are so pink, it looks like you're getting a single clear image from Playboy TV in 2002. It's so fucking weird. Characters will be one color, like a character will be one color, one frame, one scene. And then when they come back in the next scene, they will be a totally different color. It's bizarre. Fucking bizarre. And I can't stress this enough. The thing about ecchi shows, and the reason, the thing about ecchi shows that is kind of universally true, is you want to see a good pair of boobs. You want to see a good butt. You want to see, like, the thing about Plastic Little is Plastic Little is an ecchi show. It is also unstoppably gorgeous. It is also just unstoppably beautiful. The thing about Outlaw Star is it's got like a smooth style. But like when you have like the topless bathhouse world scene, like they do a great job of drawing those ladies. They look real hot. The reason why I'm bringing this up, other than just be a complete degenerate, it's because they don't do a great job of drawing naked people in this show. And in a show with just a staggering amount of nudity, you want that to be true. You want it to be true that, like, you can draw a human butt for half a damn. But somehow, miraculously, they do not. Like, the butts are bad. The boobs are weird. Like, it's not. Okay. So, everybody listening to this probably knows what hentai is. When you watch hentai, it's not always amazingly animated. But oftentimes, the way it can be passable is that it's amazingly drawn. Like, if the thing you're selling is sex, the sex better look good. And that is for things that are just porn, but also things that are supposed to titillate and excite. And so, like, at no point in this show was there a thing where I was like, no, I have no problems with that anatomy. That is hot. Like, all points, when there's a naked person on screen, I'm like, yeah, but why? What? That's not how spines work, dog. And like, that shouldn't enter into it. Yes, there is interpretation in body styles and interpretation in what people find hot, and like bimbofication is like a version of that. But and so it's himbofication in the opposite direction. But holy shit. Holy God. It's just not drawn well enough for the thing it is. And that's what really... That's... Like, at the point at which I was watching this, I was like... I haven't, like... Not a good butt on a single human in this thing. What's happening? We're spending so much time naked in a bathhouse. And just... Like... Fucking... No action. No, like... And not, like, no action. They're doing the, like, anime bathhouse shit. But, like, it doesn't look good. And to be clear, once again, that's why it surprised me so much that Staple Entertainment also did Vermillion Gold. Because Vermil is, like, a walking fucking turn-on. She's just walking down the street just flipping switches for people constantly. And that's like part of the deal with the show and the property. And you're just like, they made that and they made this, but they couldn't bring any of the like real etchy sexiness that they brought to bear in that to this. Now, I don't know if the same people made the same thing. I just know they came out of the same studio. It just floored me. I'm very rarely floored by or even really notice real dips in animation quality and animation stylings. And once again, I've said this before, I don't usually talk about this stuff because I think that to produce any animated thing and get it in a broadcast loop or in a streaming loop takes an immense amount of time and skill and all this other stuff. But at the same point, you gotta have some quality control. Like you gotta have some ability to like make sure that the characters are the same color from scene to scene. You gotta make sure that like, so the best example of this I can possibly give. Actually, not possibly give, but best example that I'm going to give right now is the first time I watched the first Twilight movie, I did so freakishly illegally, and I think we did a double feature. I'll have to ask Lauren, because Lauren was also involved in this, along with Larry. Both of the other hosts of the Uncanny Curse podcast, which was a podcast me, Lauren, and our other college friend Larry did about X-Men for like a year or something, participated in this with me. I went and I found and I illegally torrented both the first Twilight movie and Dragon Ball Z Evolution. And we watched both those movies, to be clear. And there's a scene really early on in the first Twilight where they're like in a courtyard and they're talking. And you just see a guy in the background just do this little butt wiggle that is so on camera, and it feels like he's so unaware that everything in you is like, he didn't know he was on camera. He's just having a fun old time having a conversation with somebody who's over there. He's not just in another movie. We're seeing reality creep in around the edges of this fucking film. That shouldn't happen. It feels like that level of, like, control over the product was also here. Like, it feels like I don't know what the production schedule in this was, but my gut feeling was it was not good. It just wasn't, like, the production schedule just probably was not good. Because it doesn't look very good. And it doesn't look very good in a way that's, like, so tangible and so aware, but also so... It makes me question, like, why make this show? Why make this show and then also push all the buttons to get this show promoted in this way? I don't know what to do with it. It's so bizarre. Because, like I keep saying, characters are different colors. Anatomy is all over the place. You know, the character designs, while interesting, are not there. And as a final example, all of this except for the nudity part, thank God, we're going to talk about the grandpa. The grandpa, the king, the quote unquote king of this, like, of the land of light, the place he may is from, and the fucking princess of, and all this stuff, is such a weird character. Because, and also, they call the main character the Ring King, which is such an alliteration that it just, like, bounces around in your head endlessly. You just hear ring, king, 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 ring, king, 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 and it's so bizarre. It's such an odd choice of you could have called him, like, the ultimate husband or something. You had so many opportunities and you just didn't do it. But so that's one weird thing. So in the show, he travels around and he's, like, slowly amassing wives until he gets a total of 5. Because there are 5 rings, so he gets 5 wives. But he also has this other dude who is the ultimate fucking bros before hoes guy. I want to describe him as he was supposed to become the Ring King, but it's also totally fine that he hasn't, that he didn't end up being the Ring King. It's like, no, it's cool. The job seems like it sucks. I'm going to go marry the person I actually love, like a normal human. Good luck with that, though. And then you have the grandpa, who is, like, this big magical wizard, but, like, he's also really goofy. And, like, I know literally a week ago I was praising anime for being goofy and not for getting to be goofy. But, like, this feels goofy in the way that it, and spoiler alert for, and if you've seen Dune, you'll know what I'm talking about. So, spoilers for Dune. In Dune, there's a scene where Paul Atreides is simultaneously finding out that he is Islamic space cocaine Jesus and breaking up with his girlfriend. And yes, I think of Spice as space cocaine. Fight me. And throughout the movie, whenever he does something that's, like, foretold, they have this, like, like, they have this sound cue that plays. And it's hilarious because you suspect that it's being overused, and then in the moment where it, like, everybody's like, oh, you're definitely space cocaine Jesus, right? And he's, like, just like, yeah, fine, I'll be space cocaine Jesus, sure. This seems like a mistake, but okay. His girlfriend sees him doing that and, like, well, we're done. And as she's just like, Paul, she is essentially like, you're a dirtbag, Paul, and walks off and storms off. You get the, like, as foretold. Drop. And it's such like, as foretold. She called Paul a dirtbag, and she was right. He was the dirtbag.
But, like,
that's the kind of weird and goofy that the grandpa ends up feeling like. He ends up, like, and the thing about Dragon Ball that makes the goofiness work, I think, is that there's a neutral there. There's, like, a neutral to, there's a neutral where he's not fucking up, but he's not the biggest badass to someone like Vegeta. Vegeta, you can see, being pissed all the time, but just walking around the world. Just, like, existing. The thing with a character like the grandpa from Tales of Wedding Rings, it's like, you don't, what the fuck? Like, this guy showed, first off, you're free, I guess it's cultural, it's fine, you're giving your daughter away to some fucking rando who's going to collect four other women and, like, save the world. I guess that's worth it. But, like, once your daughter finally gets to marry her childhood friend, he's like, well, okay, I guess you guys can fuck now. It's so weird. It's so not the best the best thing they could be doing with that joke at all. And the thing I guess I'm saying here is the reason why I'm talking about this at all is that this show feels like a swing and a miss. It feels like a real missed opportunity in a way that I think is actually not that common. Because most shows, they kind of live up to what they set out to do. Or they kind of soft fail and just kind of are. And it's telling this is happening where just kind of hard, with this kind of like swing and a miss happens the most often, and that's in the isekai genre, because it's part of what upsets me the most about this show is that it has an interesting entree into the isekai-ness of it, in that this character fully chose to just full on, he didn't get hit by a truck, he didn't get reincarnated, none of that shit. He went through a portal. He picked it. He did it. He knew my childhood friend, who I have a serious crush on, who I am in love with, is from another dimension. It's from a fantasy world. I'm going to follow her to that fantasy world in the name of love. That's an interesting way into it. And then there's like nothing to help you feel good about it. There's nothing, they don't do enough interesting with it to make it worth it. In fact, that on top of the weirdo production hiccups in it just makes everything like the soup of bad. That, like, say what you will about In Another World with My Fucking Smartphone. Say what you will about any plethora of isekai nonsense. They don't. Like, I'm thinking about the nailing a helicarrier to another helicarrier from In Another World, My Smartphone, a bridge thing I saw. Fucking insane. But anyway, they still have this, like, baseline of quality that this doesn't seem to meet. And what really surprised me is that this was a show that was on the main stage for Crunchyroll at its big East Coast convention at Anime NYC. Like, it played, and then they played fucking, and then like a couple hours later they played Metallic Rouge and had a whole thing. And it should tell you something that, like, this was played in the premiere blocks, and Metallic Rouge got its own thing. Got its whole own, like, they brought Studio Bones execs over and interviewed them. Because the thing about, like, all the stuff that you just premiere is you just want to get, at some point you're just filling holes in that case. Would it have been more interesting to find better quality things? Probably. Could they have? Probably. But they didn't. They showed this. And this thing is just a weird dumpster fire. But it is also, it fits the, like, mold of what you would think an anime watcher would want. So it makes sense. But on that note, this is where I'm going to end the slow roasting of this poor fucking thing. If you like this episode, new episodes of the show come out every Thursday. They are like this. They are about a show or property. But until next week, I've been Alex. This has been Lunchbox Radio. And I'll talk to you next time.